So, a glimpse into hell last night for me, Jeff Merrick.
What, 20 rounds of hell?
20 rounds of hell.
Is this going to be your Dante's Inferno? This 20 rounds of shootout hell? Is that what it is to you?
I mean, it's funny. I think it was Dan Steinberg from the Washington Post, who's a, you know, buddy of mine. I think he called it one of the greatest sporting events he'd ever seen last night, watching the 20 round shootout.
I don't know that I'd go that far. It was pretty exciting, though. Like, you got, I know you're not a shootout guy. That's been well established. I know you'd like it to go the way of the Rover and cover point in the NHL. But at the same time, Florida coming back after, you know, having, you know, facing death shots five times. Mm-hmm. They come back from five death shots. Come on.
Oh, no. I'm all for it. I found it to be very exciting. And the reason why, as you know, I'm going to repurpose the shootout for my own nefarious needs to disprove the shootout's
naturally, of course.
Yeah, success and entertainment value.
Here's Greg Wyshynski channeling his inner Daryl Sutter. Here we go. I would be happy only if you said it as if you were Daryl.
It's probably my Daryl Sutter is that it's very close to my Mike Babcock. We'll do it anyway.
Close. Okay, go for it.
Unpredictable. That was it, though. That was one of my big harangues about the shootout and the reason why, you know, I was an early adopter, but many others have soured on it, is the fact that I find it to be very predictable. I find the moves to be predictable. I find the shooters to be predictable. I find the whole thing to be very, very boring. But when you get to 20 rounds.
Wish, can you hang on 1 second?
Yeah, sure.
Apparently, people can't hear me on the live stream.
Not really. It's just me talking to you.
So far, it's just you talking to me. Brent, do you think we can do something to solve? Is pot it up as high as you can? Is my channel open? I'm just quiet.
Can
you want me to talk louder?
Merrick, no.
This may be the
show. That's what I said, Clarence. I said that the shootout is terrible. I know you're an angel. I know people can't see you, but the shootout is terrible.
Yeah. No. Everyone still can't hear me.
So evidently, I've been talking to myself.
Pretty much. This might be a kind of a fun. This might be kind of a fun show if you can hear me and you can respond as if it's like you. Oh, what's that, Jimmy? Oh, Harvey. This is going to be the Harvey edition.
I went with Clarence, the angel from "It's a Wonderful Life."
It's wonderful.
It's Harvey.
This could be Harvey.
Giant bunny. Yeah.
I'm essentially your giant rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
Hang on a second. No, people still can only hear me. I can only hear you, Wish.
I invite those listening to the feed right now to invent your own Merrick retorts to what I'm saying at this point. Is that your phone blowing up to say that no one can hear you?
Yeah,
oh, wait,
I think
no one can hear your phone blowing up either.
I'm gonna call back in. Brent is everything. You want to call an engineer, Brent, just in case. Going to get one. I'm gonna call back in now. Okay, hold on. This is
all
exciting.
Right. So Merrick's gonna call back in, ladies and gentlemen. I apologize for the dead air. It was actually my radio partner speaking. It was the dead air that you heard? Good God, why does this always happen to this fucking podcast? While Merrick is calling back in on his magic podcasting box, I will say this. And by the way,
hello.
I was doing a, hey, are you back now? Can people hear you?
Well, here's the thing. I'm back, but I need to know whether people can actually hear me.
If you can hear
me. So
Merrick,
I'm waiting for Twitter to roll, roll in.
Or tell him on Twitter that you can hear
can
him.
Can you hear me? Oh, man.
Can anyone else?
This is gonna end one day, right?
Oh, yeah. It's gonna end in a fight. If this happens and you're in studio, it's gonna end in a fiery way. Anyone hear Merrick yet?
No. This will just me be saying. This will just be. Can anyone? Someone tweet? Can anyone?
No.
Clarence, no. More like Harvey. Anyone there? No, I don't think so. Anybody on Twitter? Why don't we do an experiment? Obviously, we can't do it when Jody Shelley's on. Why don't we do a podcast where you talk to me, but no one can hear me?
Okay.
It's a very high concept.
Okay. Here we go. Ready? Here we go. This is our new All podcast right. concept in which I speak to Jeff Merrick, but only I can hear him. Jeff, how do you feel about the Canadian junior team's chances in the World Junior Championships?
That's really good. Oh, now I've got a huge echo.
Now he's got a huge echo in his ear.
Oh my god, this is awful.
Oh my god, this is awful.
So you're just gonna repeat whatever I said?
God, oh, hold on. I got it. Okay. So Jeff, what do you think about the Canadian World Juniors team's chances this year? Go ahead.
Not so great.
Not so great.
Hang on, we gotta fix this echo in my ear. If we're gonna fix anything at all.
We gotta fix this echo in my ear.
Oh, see, I've turned my hat sideways, and that'd be Jeff Merrick. It's a perfect Steve Danglish way to handle the podcast.
No, tons of tweets. I'm not here. This is great.
How is this even possible?
I don't know, but this is we've only been doing the show for 4 years, so why should we expect it?
If I may, we are 6 minutes into the show. Jeff Merrick is yet to be heard from because no one can hear him because of a technical difficulty. I can tell you exclusively that we've reached the moment in which Merrick gets a little he gets a little salty.
No,
he's a
I'm
little
here.
Salty in his voice.
No, like, Phil Coker, Patrick Clark, Jeremy Ballaston.
Oh,
all saying,
good. Because we had reached the threshold, friend. We had reached the threshold where your bemusement over the technical difficulty becomes.
And yeah.
Ravaging saltiness about it.
No, becomes me just saying, okay, I'm done. Goodbye. Let me know when you figure out how to technically make a podcast happen that we've only been doing for 4 years.
Previously on Merrick versus Wyszynski.
Jeff Merrick asked Greg to do a Daryl Sutter impression. Greg lamented the 20-round shootout. Merrick said, you'll probably find a way to spin this in your favor because you hate the shootout.
Ryan Project. Ryan says that you summon the voice of Merrick with Junior Talk. That's what brought it out of the volcano. That's what brought it in.
And now the stunning conclusion of Merrick versus Wyszynski.
Okay, let's start the shootout.
So the whole podcast again. All right, we go. We're back like a vertebrae. Okay. Here we go. Come on, let's do this.
And
I'm getting
three,
serious. I'm taking
one.
My hoodie off. Hold on.
Okay. Whoa. That means you're more serious now than you were at our live show.
Yeah, I know.
I looked over at Merrick.
I started sweating, and I was like, if I take my shirt off now, I'm going to look like Norm from Cheers, so I'm just going to leave it on.
Good afternoon, everybody. So listen, the shootout last night, the 20-rounder with the 40 guys. Unpredictability back into the shootout. Like, that's where it gets fun. Like, the reason it was fun last night was the essential fact that you didn't know how or when it was going to end. And what a refreshing concept. It was like throwing it back to 2006, back when we didn't know how shootouts were going to end, and we didn't see all the moves, and we didn't see the pedestrian nature of the skills competition. Last night was refreshing because when Brooks Orpik pulls that move,
oh my god,
Luongo, you're like, oh my god, is this Merrick Malik part two? When Willie Mitchell has the puck on his stick, and you're like, I've never actually seen Willie Mitchell that close to the net. Like, that's unpredictable. Like the whole thing was a ton of fun.
We don't know if he's going to, you know, get a rash or the mumps when he gets that close to the crease. Like, what's going to happen when Willie Mitchell actually gets close to the opposition nets? This is virgin territory in the NHL, folks.
Exactly.
This has never been done before.
No, and I get that. I found it to be exciting last night. I didn't know how it was going to end. Obviously, Nick Bjugstad wins the game on a very nice move against Brayden Holtby, and the Panthers get a very nice big win in the shootout. But that was the thing for me. It wasn't the fact that it was – the thrill of it was the same thrill that you get in playoff hockey, save for the stamina aspect, save for the staggering warriors on their last legs aspect that really makes playoff overtime so special. This was cool. It was fun, and it was unpredictable, and that really was the thing for me, was that it went to that place where the shootout doesn't seem to go anymore, which is you were literally wondering to yourself, who is going to be the hero here?
How many people do you think got aboard the bandwagon cat last night? The bandwagon cats last night.
Oh,
who do you think
you
we brought aboard yesterday to Team
I was going to say, you tell me, driver. Did you happen to look over your shoulder? Did you happen to see anybody hop on the bus?
I've been on the bus now for a week, so I can speak with some arrogance about this. Because I was Team Cat before Team Cat was 20-round cool. So I could say with some arrogant authority about being Team Cat, about all of this.
They're a playoff team right now. Playoff started today. The Cats would be in. Cats is Cats.
Yeah, man. Amazing what happens when you get a save. Right? Well, amazing things happen when you start to get saves.
I forgot where I had him in the division, but I knew that he'd make a difference there. You had to know he'd make a difference there.
I didn't. I had them out. I mean, it's still a lot of hockey, but I had them out, clear out, and be another, you know, maybe lottery type year for the Florida Panthers, and they might have a house cleaning at the end of the season. Thankfully, that hasn't happened. Because you know what? At the end of the day, I want Dale Tallon to do well in Florida. You know why I want Dale Tallon to do well in Florida? Because he got the raw deal of all time in Chicago. That's why I want to see Dale Tallon do really well in Florida. Plus, there's just a lot of people there that I like, too. So.
Yeah, and like you said, they are kind of the island of misfit toys. You
totally.
Know, that's part of it, too.
Totally.
Yeah. There's
totally.
Some appealing about that.
Yep, it's pretty cool.
I didn't hear you say that the market deserves it, though. Sometimes when we talk about teams that are, you know, perennial losers, like the Blue Jackets, for example, last year, when we took up that cause, we said it's because the fans deserve a playoff season. They deserve to live and die with their team for a while. Do you have the same – now, you can say this. I don't think anyone would be offended. I can't imagine anyone still listening to this podcast. Do you have the same affinity for Panthers fans that you do, say, Blue Jackets fans? As a Canadian.
As a Canadian, most Canadians just sort of look at it lazily and say, oh, I'll get rid of them, put them in Quebec City, and let's be over and done with it. But I still have, like, the thing is, I still have memories of the Rats hitting the ice. I still have memories of, you know, Florida Panthers fans stacking the building. And I still have, you know, mind you, the hockey was, oh, God, like, numbingly boring at the time, but nonetheless.
That was part and parcel of the way people, you know, other teams played. The Devils never played that style. The Devils are very run and gun.
Oh yeah, no, of course.
Remember, but
yeah, up and down high tempo team. Did I ever tell you what Doug McClain told me when he was with the Panthers? When a high flying team like the Pittsburgh Penguins would come to town, for example, or a team that could really skate and was going to skate Florida into the ground, he'd tell the Zamboni driver to double flood.
Nice.
See, extra water on the ice just to slow things right down.
I'm such a geek for the little stadium chicanery.
Oh yeah, that's one.
I think I mentioned on the show before the one with the Meadowlands where I think it was Bill Parcells when he coached the Giants used to play around with which doors to open to affect the wind inside the stadium. So when the opposing team was trying to kick a field goal, they'd F with the trajectory of the ball by opening up certain doors within the bowels of the stadium at Giant Stadium. Which
really?
Was a beautiful thing. Oh, yeah.
Remember
didn't
the Washington Capitals, I want to say this would have been late 80s, so they still would have been playing in Landover. They got dinged for messing around with the offensive zone, dimensions. Because they made
Washington the blue line?
Yeah, dude.
That's great.
So for two of the three periods, they had the big, huge offensive zone. You know what? You know who told me the story? Now that I think about it, it was Paul Stewart that told me the story. Because what Stewie would do, he would measure the size of the zones by strides he would take in the pregame, in the warm-up, by strides that he would take to get from the goal line to the blue line. And he's like, hold on a second here. I got a half extra stride. Something's wrong with the offensive zone here. And, of course, Washington was like, no, nothing to see here. Move along, silly referee. And apparently, the blue lines were out. So the offensive zone was a little bit bigger.
Sir, we got to delay the game here. We have to repaint the lines.
Why
is that, Stewie? Oh, well, your blue line appears to be a parabola, which I don't believe is allowed.
And I got to go back to the rule book here, but I really don't think that's
It says here, you know, section 15, subsection 3, no parabolas.
Yeah. Right, just so we're on the same page, too, I got a bunch of tweets about this while the shootout was going on yesterday. No, goaltenders are not allowed
to
take parts, just so everybody understands
now,
that. As funny as that might be, the goalies aren't allowed to take parts.
It is kind of miraculous we've only had two of these marathons. I mean, this is obviously up there with the Rangers
and
the American League goal.
And both against Washington.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my God. I forgot about that. By the way,
Caps.
It is, as I tweeted last night, the most Washington thing that ever Washingtoned, that the Capitals would engage in a history-making shootout of marathon proportions while the NHL is hoping every Caps fan in D.C. has ordered Epics and is watching Epics and is watching that freaking show. Meanwhile, the Caps are like, round 18. Ooh, will Brooks Orpik score? The thing that's amazing about it is we haven't had more of these, but You know what's funny? I didn't see this voiced much last night, and it's probably because of the absolute euphoria and people picking up this thread and watching the shootout and really enjoying themselves. It does speak to that debate that we had during the Olympics of what is the better format for the shootout. Because you mentioned goalies. No, goalies don't have to shoot, but everybody else does before you get a second turn. And that sometimes is how you end up with these marathons, and you end up with, like, who was it, Kulikov last night taking a wrister from 20 feet out as a shootout attempt.
Just wants to go back to the bench. Just get me off here. Get me back on the bench.
It really does come down to whatever your particular brand of vodka is. Do you prefer the TJ Sochi, Jonathan Taves and Jr. Out your best format?
Yes.
Or do you prefer the freak show format, which is you go through your best, and then you get to your OKs, and then all of a sudden Willie Mitchell has the game on us to kind of break away?
I do like the freak show element of, you know, let's see if Willie Mitchell can salt this thing away. But no, I want to see the best players take the shots. Because in that, again, we made the point, in that one shootout, TJ Oshie earned himself an international reputation and an international nickname with TJ Oshie with that. Like, I told you a story, like, after that game was done, as we all know, I live in Stouffville. It's a very small place, like 38,000 people live here. And so the game
Everybody
is done.
Knows your name.
And I go to the grocery store to go pick up, I don't know, coffee, milk, whatever. And I'm in the parking lot, put my groceries in the car, and the two guys that are pushing the carts, you know what they're talking about? TJ Oshie.
What?
This amazing performance they saw from TJ Oshie. And the one guy
was like, not bad for an American.
the one guy was like a completely casual hockey fan. He goes, yeah, I didn't even know this guy existed before. And so the guy went into a whole routine about who TJ Oshie is and all that. But in that one moment, like, that guy became a superstar. Why? Because he got to shoot more than once. So, and the Jonathan Taves performance of the World Junior Championship, that's still sort of legendary around junior hockey circles. So, yeah, give me the guys shooting again any day of the week.
Yeah. That's interesting. So I kind of go back and forth on it because there is a part of me that enjoys the freak show aspect of it. And I enjoy it for two reasons. One, like I said, the unpredictability. But two, because what is your boy's other major gripe about the shootout all the time? It's that it's not a team competition. No defensemen playing their positions. No passes attempted. At the very least, you feel like there is team participation when you are watching, you know, Brooks Orpik take a shot. You know, at least you feel like the whole team's involved. But if the shootout is a function, then
let me jump on this then. Would you feel better then about the shootout if every person on the bench had the shoot and you tallied up the score at the end?
I would take a cyanide pill if I had to sit through that nonsense every time we went to a shootout.
Mr. Freak Show. How about this then? You do Bizarro World for the second round. You're a left hand shot. Yeah, grab a right hand stick. Go shoot. And goalies have to flip around too. If you're a southpaw, you flip over the mitt.
This podcast is nothing if not a marketplace of ideas and an incubator for amazing theories and innovations. How about this? Let me feel you out on this. The coaches pick three shooters, and then the opposing coaches pick the other three shooters.
I brought that up coming out of the lockout when this thing was first introduced. Don't let your own team pick the shooters. Let the other team choose it.
We never
get those moments of sort of vitriol between coaches. That would be it. Like that, those moments of insult. Coaches always go out the door and around the corner not to insult the other team. Guess what? Let them choose the shooters for the other team.
And how sauced up would the players be about it too? The opposing coach chooses Brooks Orpik because he doesn't think he's got hands, and then he pulls off that move, and then he skates by the bench, and it's double birds. Oh, my God. Let's bring the hate back into hockey. You can't spell hockey without hate because you need an H and an E. But seriously, I would be fine. That would be something. That would be something interesting. That you pick your three shooters. Yeah. The opposing team picks the next three shooters. It puts the onus on the first three to win it before you get to the hacks, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. How fun would that be? But to answer your question about the Oshie Taves thing, there's still a part of me that, like I said, likes the unpredictability of the circus freak show part of it. But at the end of the day, it's still a showcase for your stars. I mean, that's the function of it. The function of it is twofold for the NHL. It's show off your best offensive talent in a skills competition and make sure that the game doesn't end in a tie. Right.
Yeah, so, that's the bigger one. For some reason, the NHL is just like, too bad, we're done with ties.
Yeah, I just don't understand that. But the second one about the star players would speak to the idea that it is better for your sport, it is better for promotion, it is better for everything else, and Oshie's the best example of this, to put the game in the hands of one or two players and not have it get to the point where it was last night.
So you like the idea then of repeating the stars?
I do. I mean, if we have to have this nonsense, then at the very least, having it in the stars' hands serves to either make new stars in the case. For example, the Islanders wouldn't necessarily trot out Tavares every time. It would probably either be Nielsen or Okposo. And in that case, you know, Kyle Okposo versus Jonathan Toews in a 7-round shootout, where do I sign up?
There are just some guys that were money at it that you don't think so. Remember when Adrian Aucoin went on that run with the Coyotes?
Oh, yeah.
Where Adrian Aucoin just could not be stopped on the shootout? It's a freak, but there it is. Yeah. And there's some guys you think would be money, but, you know, Jagr's always tying his skates when it's time for the shootout. No, coach, can't go, got to tie my skates. Okay.
And in the case of, like, Ovechkin, like, Ovechkin sucked at the shootout earlier in his career. Sucked at it.
You know why?
It's because he doesn't really have moves going to the net.
Well, so with that huge banana curve that he has, everyone knew he's coming in, he's going to shoot because he's not going to go backhand. So it's like, you play the shot.
Right, because he's not going to go backhand, exactly.
Not with that curve.
I just stand in the circle and fire the howitzer. Who cares?
Yeah, I just have someone like fire a puck at him from the corner and he one times it.
Jody Shelley is going to join us today to talk about the resurgent Columbus Blue Jackets. But the standings in the East are very interesting right now. So you have Tampa Bay, Detroit, Montreal, 43, 42, 42. Then Toronto at 41. Over in the Metro, 44 for Pittsburgh, 42 for the Islanders. Then 34 for the Rangers. Then 34 for the Panthers in the second wild card.
Dun, dun, dun.
I have to believe that there are going to be teams that go on runs, and I have to believe that there will be teams like Toronto, for example, who will plummet. That said, right now,
big road trip for Toronto coming up. This could be the one where they plummet. This is the big one because it's. I mean, show me the list of teams and to score themselves out of problems on the road. That list is pretty short, and that's what Toronto's been doing. That's what TO's been doing.
And 8-1-1 with a lot of home cooking. 14-7 at home, by the way, for Toronto.
Yep.
That's a lot of home games already. So Florida and the Rangers spots seem like they'd be in play as of right now, which is really good news for Washington and really good news for Columbus and really good news for Jersey. And if you think Philly's still in it, really good news for them as well.
Well, I was going to say, when do you get really concerned about Boston?
As long as you're within spitting distance of the wild card, you'll be all right. But, I mean, they're 9 points out right now of the three spot, and they are 8 points out of the first wild card.
Remember when Boston used to be able to shut it down, got the lead in the third, this thing is over?
Yep.
Have you seen one game like that this year?
No, but I'll say this, though. They're going to get healthier, and they have found a line. Congratulations, Boston. They found a line. Riley Smith, Brad Marchand, and Patrice Bergeron is a line. It's playing well.
It's always been their first line, but everyone keeps calling it their second line for whatever reason.
PBR line. The best name in hockey, maybe. Forget that 70s line, PBR line. Joining us down the line is a man who breaks down the Columbus Blue Jackets.
It's true.
On the reg, and a man who, you know, obviously also pummeled many faces during his career in the National Hockey League. He is Jody Shelley, and he joins us here on the Merrick Brzezinski podcast. Hello, Jody, and things are all of a sudden coming up Blue Jackets. 7-3 in their last 10 for Columbus as they try to climb back into this thing, winners of 7 in a row.
Yeah, you know what? And that's thanks for the introduction. That was awesome. Appreciate that. they're doing well. They're doing well. They're you know, a lot of injuries, had a tough start, and everyone really wrote them off. And now they're getting healthy and 7 in a row, undefeated into December. 5 out of the 7 are, you know, extra time games, overtime, and shootout. It's been fun to watch these guys come together again and really play to their identity.
You know, Jordy, we were talking about the Florida Panthers before you came on and making the point that, you know, a lot of good things can happen when you get a save, and that's what the Cats are getting with Roberto Luongo. How much, when you look at the recent success of the Blue Jackets, do you say to yourself, well, we're getting saves, and as long as you're getting saves, you're always going to be in a game?
Well, it's so big, and when you're not getting it, I don't know if you realize how big it is. It's Sergei Bobrovsky is a great goalie, and you know, coming into this season, the people that saw him 2 years ago in that playoff push where they just missed the playoffs by 1 point, and they went on a 15-2 run to put them in that spot. Sergei was just incredible, and so people saw him at that the top of his game. I thought he looked good this year. He went out with an injury. He came back. He looked a little better, and then he got sat, and Curtis McElhinney went in, and that was the last game in November. And he, you know, it was a great game. It was a 2-1 loss against Nashville. But when Sergei got the net back December 1st, he's been unreal, and it's really, it's just given this whole team this confidence that you can just see it any night. They're in full control. He's in full control, and it's a good feeling. Obviously for his teammates, but for a spectator or someone watching this group, you feel pretty confident too.
How much did last year's playoff experience and the frantic scramble to get in kind of give this team a bit of backbone they might not have had otherwise to stick through all of the injuries and all of the losing early in the season?
Well, it's interesting. Everyone talks about how you have to have a great start, and, you know, you do. You have to have a good start. You can't get behind the eight ball. But I think the way they started with the injuries, and you look at last year they found an identity, hardworking, blue-collar. Teams would leave Nationwide Arena or any opposition that they played, they'd say, they're hard to play against. They're in your face. They're relentless. They like the battles. You know, and that's kind of what they are, and they're proud of it. So they knew what their identity was, and with all the injuries, they just couldn't get any traction at the start of this year. So that's the one thing they had going for them. They knew how they wanted to play. They didn't have the players to do it. With Dubinsky out, I mean, he was a big part of it, obviously. Wisniewski was out. Some big players. Anisimov is still out. All the guys down the middle. It really was hard for them, but that's the one thing. I think last year was huge because that identity poured over to this year. They knew what they could do, and now you're seeing them kind of say, okay, we know because we're together again. And with the goalie at the top of this game, like you said, it's really – and there's a sense of urgency here. This team now is hitting that urgency that teams will hit in January, February. The push is on now here. It's a little early, but they're playing that style of hockey right now.
Has it been harder, Jody, for the Columbus Blue Jackets to sneak up on teams? I mean, you could say this the last couple of seasons is, you know what, you used to say, oh, go to Nationwide, grab a couple of points, take the guys per diem, it'll be simple, and we'll be on to the next town. Teams can't do that anymore. Like, how much harder is it for Columbus now that, despite all the injuries, the secret's out, it's a good team?
Yeah, and every coach that comes in, you'll hear them say it again. You know, any team they go against, they always say, oh, we can't take them lightly. And we were getting that sense of kind of no respect, getting the backup goaltender, in November. There's no question. This team was struggling, and teams were taking advantage of it. But now, you know, not just the 7-game winning streak, now that they're back and now that they're healthy, getting healthier, definitely. Teams aren't putting in the backup goalie, without hesitation. Teams are respecting that, hey, this is going to be a dogfight when we go into Nationwide Arena. And, you know, you'll hear a lot of teams say that, but this team really does have that strong core identity. And the fans are proud of it. The guys are proud of it. And, you know, they don't have a captain. They don't have that one standout leader. They've got to lead as a group. They got to win every game as a group. They're not relying on one superstar, although Johansson is an emerging star. Bobrovsky did steal a game in Florida where he made, 55 saves, and there was 99 attempts at the net. Those things are happening. But as a whole, they've got to do it all together. So, you know, that's part of what the teams see here. And they know coming in that, yeah, they can't take anything for granted.
No, they can't. Ryan Johansson, sir, obviously world changed for him a little bit financially. What have you seen from him this year?
You know what? He's impressed me. And he's really come in, and he's a big guy. He's in the center position, and, you know, he holds out, misses every single day of camp. He gets here the last day of camp, I think, and spends one day practicing and jumps in the lineup. And he does things. He makes everything look easy. Even on the shootout, I don't know if you caught the goal the other night, forehand, backhand, forehand. Boy, I'll tell you, I'm not a skilled guy, obviously, at all, but he made that look so easy. And you could try that in your driveway with a tennis ball. And I bet you 9 out of 10 times you won't be able to get it back to your forehand. And he does things like that all the time, just little subtle plays. He's got kind of the Joe Thornton kind of aura about him. When he gets the puck, people back off, and he almost baits them to come in when he's on the wall on the power play. He's been a lot of fun to watch. He's definitely matured a lot in the last 3 years. I met him when he was a young guy here, and we'd do skates before the season. And, you know, he was raw and young, and he was almost like a junior high kid sitting next to me. But now he's, boy, I'll tell you, he's becoming a pro, and I think he's starting to realize how good he really is.
Jody, I will not let you get, I will not let you get away with this, sir. 10 points in 80 games for Jody Shelley in 2005-06. So don't even tell me you're not a skilled player, okay? It's nonsense.
Double digits, baby. Double digits.
Hey, double digits, exactly.
I had great line mates.
spoken like a real teammate. Always defer. A follow up to Ryan Johansson as well. When did it change? Because it wasn't that long ago. This guy was a healthy scratch in the American Hockey League playoffs, and we thought, whoa, maybe Columbus threw away a pick here. Where did it change? How did it change? Why did it change for Johansson?
Well, it's been a process for him. He's came here right out of junior, and it's been a losing atmosphere. And, you know, I don't know if he knew where he fit in, what his role was going to be. He went through those things. Conditioning was, you know, people talked about that. And I think that comes with losing. I think that all those things, all the negatives really come out, and that's where the noise is made, is when teams are losing. You know, you look at any team in the NHL, when they go through a losing streak, they're not in shape, they're not eating right, they're not doing this right, whatever. So he was part of that for a while. And I just think he just needed to grow up. I think that you can't really blame the kid for those things. I think that the organization was in a different place, and you know, he went down there, and his attitude needed to be adjusted. But good on him to react. I think he loves the group of guys that he's with here. I think he fits in perfectly. And I think he sees now from some of the guys like Boone Jenner, who's not a very old guy, but he's got this way about him, this leadership quality, this go-to-work attitude all the time. Just a good old boy attitude. I think that rubs off on him. I think the coaching staff have found a way to motivate him. And I just think that he realizes that this organization relies on him. And, you know, he got paid for a few years here now, but I think he might see big picture. You know, when you see guys making $8-9 million, you know, maybe someone tapped him on the shoulder and said, hey, you could be that guy. So maybe that's all kind of clicking for him too.
From a team building perspective, where are the holes still? Like, if they climb back into this thing and have the cap space and want to get aggressive, where do you think they go?
Well, they're pretty good up the middle, and their defense is pretty good. They could probably use another puck moving defenseman, but I don't know. I mean, there's still some bodies that are, you know, Gibbons is the new guy in the NHL. Skilly seems is still trying to prove himself. Every night. Fourth line has got some dynamic to it, but maybe could use a little more speed. They're missing guys like Mark Letestu, who is just that utility player, all situation. Artem Anisimov is out. Ryan Murray is still out. And then Nathan Horton. So if you could ever get those four guys back, you know, that would be a nice little boost for this team. But, you know, I don't know. You got Nick Foligno, who volunteered to jump in the middle when he saw it was getting thinned, and he's been awesome there, puck possession-wise. Not winning a lot of face-offs, but working on that. They've got a lot of utility guys, a lot of versatile players, and I don't know. I think that you could always use another superstar maybe, but I don't know what you'd have to give up to get one.
And, Jody, last one for me. I want to follow up on Nick Foligno as well. He's almost a point-of-game player for the Columbus Blue Jackets. 26 years of age, looks to be hitting his stride professionally, right in that sweet spot of the career. He's poised to become a UFA on July 1. Is this guy going to come as close to ringing the bell as you can in Columbus?
Yeah, I mean, he wants to be here. He's saying all the right things. They just started talking in the last few weeks. Yeah, he's awesome. He's a puck possession all the way, and he's so impressive with the puck down low. I didn't really know this at all about him. But, you know, last night I'm between the benches, and he comes back from hitting the posts, and he comes over by me, and he goes, you know, I'm going to go score right now. And I'm watching this guy thinking, okay, it's kind of fun to be down here chatting with you like this. And then he goes out and takes the puck around a couple of the Red Wings defensemen and almost scores the goal. And I'm thinking, that's pretty impressive that he can just, you know, have that will about you. And he has that will all the time. And I don't know. I think he'll be here. They're obviously going to have to talk big number with him. He's having a heck of a UFA year. So good on him. But I think the Jackets would be remiss not to get him back for the next few years.
And last one for me, I think I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about a player that is probably near and dear to your heart for the way he plays. Number 47 in your program is number one in your hearts, Dalton Prout for the Blue Jackets.
He's awesome. I love this kid. and you saw him with the Lucic situation there. And you know, he's an honest kid. He just thought he was in a battle, popped Lucic. And Lucic, you know, I'm not sure what he was doing in that situation, but he caught him and he went down. And Dalton Prout's the guy that's had to battle to get in the lineup. And with all these injuries, he's still found himself out, like, in and out a little bit and thinking too much. And he's got to the point now where they'll just let him play. He can make mistakes and not worry about it. And he has just blossomed in the last 3 weeks. And I couldn't be happier for him. And he's tough. Like, last night there was a situation. There was a Tatar was cutting across the middle for the Red Wings, and he kind of toe-picked. And boy, if he didn't go down, I think we'd still be there because Dalton would have laid this kid out. So he's just a big, he's got a little bit of a mean streak, and he's got that little left you saw with Lucic. So love this kid.
That he does.
That little left, I like that. That's good. Jody, thanks so much. Thanks. Thanks for. Oh, actually, you know what? One thing. Actually, before we let you go, the one player or type of player that's always near and dear to my heart, did what you did and started his pro career in the ECHL. It's becoming more and more commonplace, but once upon a time, this is when you broke in professionally, generally when you were playing in the ECHL, that was the end of the line. Describe your journey from the East Coast League up to the NHL.
Well, I mean, honestly, you feel so far away from the NHL, and it's an extension of major junior hockey, you know, except your paycheck is a few dollars more, and that's not saying much. But I look back and I couldn't be happier to have been I played for the Chiefs, you know, we watched Slapshot every day on the bus and every time we traveled and, you know, the Oregon was still up there from the movie and I couldn't write a better script. I got my opportunity from there to play in the American League, but when you get to play in the NHL and you look back, I know there's a few of us that have done it. We're all very proud and I think anyone can say that. They're proud of where they came from and I'm proud to have played in the East Coast Hockey League and then been a part of the NHL. It's just, It's a lot of character down there. There's a lot of nights where you lay there and look at the ceiling and think, what the heck am I doing? Am I really going to chase this? But if you ever get a chance to get up to the next level and then the next one, it's well worth it. And we all hold our head high to have been a part of that. Well, it was a rough and tough league then. I don't know how rough and tough it is now, but hopefully it's still got that little bit of Bass Brothers in it.
And Johnstown specifically. Last question. I swear this is the last one. While you were there, Jody, please tell me you went to the Aces.
Of course, I went to the Aces.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Because that of course is a legend. And the great story there is Dave Hansen, who we all know, who missed out on being the third Hansen brother that was taken by. I can't remember. Was it one of the Carlsons? Dave did go in. Dave was one of the Hansen brothers. He actually had his wedding reception at the Aces
when he
had his wedding reception. Yeah, he told me that a couple of years ago. So, well, good for you for going there.
No, we did everything that was in that movie. We made sure we, you know, there was parts of that. We met locals that were in the movie.
Did you get a picture with the dog? The dog that saved
the
Charleston?
The dog that saved Charleston.
That's fantastic. Jody, you're the best.
Johnstown, go check it out.
Oh, don't worry. That is, there's a few little laundry items if I ever make it to Johnstown that I'll have to do based on my favorite movie. Jody, thanks so much for stopping by. We appreciate it.
Take care, Jody.
Yeah, that is Jody Shelley.
Johnstown for you would be like Roswell, New Mexico for me, I think. It'd be just like immersing yourself in a culture for like a day or two.
Yeah.
Hey, Dalton Prout wears number 47, and towards the end of our conversation, I always like to talk to the young kids out there like Eddie Olchuk does, and I say, all you kids out there, pay attention.
Download
for a
podcasts. Yeah.
Yeah. All you kids out there, when you do get drafted, the first thing you should do is go to hockeyreference.com. And you should look at every number and find out where the soft numbers are. Find out which number you could become the man synonymous with that number. 47s, okay?
All right, give it to me.
We have a couple playing right now. Torrey Krug, Hampus Lindholm, right. Rich Pilon, Alexander Radulov, Ladislav Nagy, Andrew McDonald, Claude Lapointe. John Graham, okay. Aaron Downey, Simone Dupre, another young whippersnapper with 47.
That's right. Yeah.
Marc-Andre Bergeron, and that's pretty much. There is 47 is in play now. Jean-Sébastien Giguère wore it with the Whalers and the Flames. But he's not. That's not the number he's synonymous
yeah,
with.
Yeah, but that. Yeah, but that's before he came, became J.S. Right. Giguere. Like that's before he became the big deal.
Right. Until he started wearing those giant pants. So that Conn Smythe.
Whatever.
Boy,
just
because
it was
you.
against your team. That's why. Just like you got your Stanley Cup, all right?
I know that's true.
You got
we
your
did.
Stanley Cup. Just don't be bitter Betty about it, all right? Just move
but
on.
I'm bitter that Paul Kariya rose from the dead and won that game. And I'm bitter that Giguere won the Conn Smythe.
That Paul Kariya wouldn't let the doctor see him because he's so terrified that he had a concussion. Went back on the ice and scored on Marty. Then had to go back in the dressing room and say, "What happened out there?" I scored what? I did.
Now, so my point is that, if you're a youngster joining the National Hockey League soon, take 47, and that Dalton Prout does have the chance to be the best 47. But also, I wanted to play a quick round of the jersey game with you. Okay, ready?
Okay, let's do it. Yeah.
Clear your mind.
Okay. Clear it up. No kokoro, mind
okay,
like water.
Just that's right. Nothing in there. Blank space, right. Baby.
I'll write your name. That.
All right. Listen to these words I'm about to say.
All right.
Marc-Andre Bergeron. What team?
Edmonton. Paired up with Chris Pronger, 2006.
You know, it's funny. You know, I don't know why this happens sometimes, but I simply can't get the picture of him as a Canadian out of my head.
Really? Because I go Tampa second.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know why.
I go Tampa second. On
maybe him. It's being named Marc-Andre and like you're in Quebec. I don't know what it is. But like I think of him as a Canadian first. But yeah, I mean, really? The Oilers make the most sense.
Okay. Patrice Bergeron. Must be Montreal, right?
Shut up. Jerome McGinley. No, I know. It's the Flames. Kids in the point. Playing that one.
Dallas Stars. Actually, Kamloops Blazers. Playing on a line with Shane Doan and Darcy. Playing on a line with Shane Doan and Darcy Tucker, one of the best lines in the history of junior hockey. Think about that line for a second. Doan, Tucker, Aginla. Tucker was the center on that line, by the way.
Good Lord.
Dominating line, junior.
That's a line that could bring some scoring and bring a little pain.
Oh, they did it. They won three World Cups in 4 years. Yeah, that team was scary.
So the new show, The Road to the Winter NHL Winter Classic, debuted on Epix last night and on Sportsnet last night. And if you haven't read the review, I wrote
Mitch
the
Korn.
Review, the big ass review
Korn.
and recap on Fuck Daddy this morning. Mitch a Korn. Couple of observations as Merrick points out, Mitch Korn may have been the breakout star in episode one.
More Mitch Korn, please. You know what? We all know the two teams. We all know Jonathan Davis. We all know Pat Kane. We all know Alexander Ovechkin. Let's just make the last three episodes about Mitch Korn. Let's just follow Mitch Korn around for three more shows.
Oh, you know what's funny, though? The first 3 minutes of the show, once we got past that nonsense at the beginning about, the funny thing about roads. What the hell is that?
What?
You know what they say about roads, the road is under your feet,
It almost sounded like. Yeah, it almost sounded like.
I know, you're going to say Sam Elliott, right?
No, no, I was going to go like Tom Waits, some like Nighthawks at the Diner era Tom Waits, when he's introducing like Big Joe and Phantom 309.
Funny thing about Rhodes.
Yeah, that's going to go with more.
Sometimes there's a man, but that, of course, I mean the dude.
But when we got past that, though, then we went to the Blackhawks, and something in my mind clicked and said, I care so much more about this team than I do the Capitals. Like, the Caps have done this. We've seen it. The Ovechkin's done it. The whole thing. I am just stop. Just show me the Blackhawks. I don't care about the other team. And then they got outside the Mitch Korn thing.
Well, and listen, man, the Barry Trotz stuff was profound. That was amazing.
Watching
Barry with his son.
Trotz and Korn. Oh, God. And you can tell Trotz is being positioned. He's being positioned as the Bilesma type who's going to be, or Laviolette, as the dedicated, brainy, follows the games on his laptop kind of guy.
I kind of saw him
last night.
I kind of saw him as they're positioning him, not so much as the Dan Bilesma, but the anti-Boudreaux. Because the last time we saw a Washington Capitals coach, and they are more similar than dissimilar in appearance, if you were a very, very casual hockey fan to the point of you haven't watched hockey since the last time the Washington Capitals were on the road to the Winter Classic, could you not have said to yourself, man, Bruce Boudreaux really cleaned himself up, eh? Boudreaux's really taking his job seriously now, and look at all this, and he's not yelling and screaming at the guys.
Actually, look at that goatee. That's Butch Boudreaux. It's his evil twin.
Butch Boudreaux. Evil twin.
But I'm glad you brought up the casual fan thing. I didn't write about this morning, but I think it's interesting. Now listen, there has always been an issue with tone when it comes to the NHL's television properties in the United States, okay? And by that I mean they've felt the need to play to the casuals. When the shows are on NBC, there has been more of a trickle now of a little bit more hardcore hockey fan knowledge now that McKenzie's been on the show. But for the most part, it's these big, juicy, grand narratives about Ovechkin versus Crosby and rivalry night. Boston and Minnesota tonight, ladies and gentlemen, that storied rivalry between the Wild and Bruins.
Whoa. The team that stole Manny Fernandez. I mean, come on. This is a huge storyline.
It's the Manny Fernandez Bowl tonight. But here's my thing, right? Like, if your show is on Epics, okay, and the whole thing with your show is covering these two teams leading up to the Winter Classic. When the show was on HBO, you could assume that the people that watched the 24/7 franchise with Manny Pacquiao, or maybe they watched Hard Knocks with the NFL teams, the casual sports fan who watches HBO for sports may check out your product. They may say, hey, look, this hockey thing sounds interesting. Let me see what that's about. So you have to maybe play it a little bit more to the casuals than you would normally. Now, this show is on Epics. No one knows where it is. If you found it last night, chances are you found it because you're a maniacal hockey fan that wants to find this show and watch it. So I found some of the stuff last night interesting because I felt like there was a bit more of a push towards the X's and O's, what's happening in practice, game stuff, if you will, than the personal, here's Joel Ward playing with a puppy kind of thing. You know, like, I felt like there was a bit more hockey smarty thing happening last night than big casual fan thing happening last night.
So you wanted to see how the different guys sharpen their blades. Oh, he's a flat bottom V guy. Oh, that's fascinating. Oh, look, he's got a toe curve. He's got a heel curve. So you thought it?
It felt more like we're talking about the game than we're talking about the personalities in the game. And I actually don't think that works. I actually think it's better when you talk about the personalities. The best times we've ever had with 24/7 was sticking a camera in Ilya Bryzgalov's face or sticking a camera in Bruce Boudreaux's face. You know what I mean? And there didn't seem to be enough of that last night. But here, a couple of things, because I had some complaints about the show and I wanted to address them from some of the things I've heard. Lord knows there's been some pushback today on my review. The music. Now, it made me mental last night listening to that show and not hearing the XX or not hearing the Black Keys or Cold War Kids or Marvin Gaye or any of the music the music, the pieces that they played during 24/7 that made that show so operatic and so emotional and so perfect in so many ways. They didn't have any of that music last night. Now, here's where things get a little hinky. I argued in the review it's because they didn't have the budget for it. I was told that it's more along the lines of because the show is so widely available on streaming sites, on NHL.com, on Epix.com, it's everywhere. You can get it anywhere now, right? This season. That it was a problem with the streaming licensing that they didn't have any like really good music, and it was all basically
that makes
like
sense.
Temp tracks from NHL. But here's the thing.
Yeah, hang on. Whoa,
doesn't that essentially just come...
Let me pause on that one thing. That's a great point, because for so long, when CBC was running Hockey Night in Canada, they couldn't put, you know, those big, sprawling Tim Thompson intros that Hockey Night would do. They couldn't put those online because of online licensing.
Oh, okay.
They were licensed for television, that's fine, but they were not licensed for the internet.
Essentially... We're still talking about money here, aren't we?
I'm assuming, but I can't tell you 100%. I remember having this conversation with Tim when I was working at Hockey Night. I was like, Tim, why don't you guys like put a space on cbcsports.ca where you have all of your intros? He goes, licensing issue for the internet. We can do it for television. And even then, you have to wait a long time for songs to clear. I remember they had to wait the longest time for, was it Love Rain Over Me or Won't Get Fooled? One of the Who songs that Timmy turned into an epic. But it's like, And I remember when he finally got it, he called me, he's like, dude, it finally cleared. The song finally cleared. I can finally do this intro. So I'm not so sure that's as simple as let's just throw money at it.
Right. So obviously what they need to do is just use public domain songs like Happy Birthday.
For he's a jolly good fellow.
Look, he scores the overtime winner. Right. You know, I felt the decision to just use sea shanties for the soundtrack of this season of the 24. It was a little risky, but. And the other thing I found out was with regards to the narration. So the guy doing the narration is a dude named Bill Camp. He's an actor. He was in Lincoln. He's a huge hockey fan. He plays hockey on Long Island. We can love him for that. It's very hard for a lot of us, and I would count myself among them, to try to watch the show without hearing the golden tones of Liev Schreiber. I think that Bill Camp did a better job than Zeppo Sutherland did on NHL Revealed last year on NBC, who was just trying to do a Schreiber impression. The other thing, though, is that the same writer that did the previous 24/7s, I think his name is Aaron Cohen, did last night's episode. He wrote last night's episode. And he's a guy who writes for a lot of documentaries. He's written for Bob Costas and done some of those commentaries things. There wasn't a narrative thread that I thought worked last night to tie the whole thing together. And I swear, listen, every writer loves their work. Lord knows I love mine more than I probably should. My shit doesn't stink, right? But when you put fingers to keyboard and you write out, there's this thing about roads. They get overlooked a lot, taken for granted. People don't think enough about how you get someplace. What? Did George Lucas write that? It's terrible. Sorry. It's terrible. No one overlooks roads. You know what? If you overlook a road, I have never once in my life taken a road for granted. You know why? Because I'm either in the bottom of a body of water without a road, or I am running into trees when I'm not on a road. I never take roads for granted, sir.
It's a shaky metaphor. What you're saying is that essentially it's the journey that counts.
Shaky.
You know, it's Alan Watts' old idea that a composer doesn't write a symphony just thinking about the last note. He doesn't think, or he or she doesn't think about the last note or the destiny of where the piece is going. The actual idea of the piece, the beauty of the piece is the rising and the falling of certain melodies that happen throughout it. Essentially, it's a dance, and you should be dancing, as opposed to just worrying about getting to that final spot.
Yeah, I feel you. I know.
No, I know, and that's what I'm saying. Like, it was. I just think that I'm with you, and I think a lot of people are on the same page. That opening couple of paragraphs.
Yeesh.
I don't know about it, but listen, it's tough. Now, here's let me give you one, because I can basically I liked it. There wasn't a whole lot of new. There wasn't a whole lot of really. There's like, you know, the hockey goofy stuff. you know, Tom Wilson and the ketchup.
Oh, that's great.
Look at this fridge. We have ketchup.
We went to Costco and bought 3 ketchups. That's great.
It's a conversation right out of every single junior hockey dressing room and gym.
Yeah.
But here's what I would like to see. I'm going to get a couple of minutes here because I got a punt for the junior podcast. Right. What I would like to see is, in the tradition of, I think the movie was called Four Rooms or something like that, but sort of a variation of that. Why not take, get 4 different directors, like 4 different people with their entire same crew.
Ooh.
Give them the exact same week or slice of life in the in the career here of the Capitals and the Chicago Blackhawks, and give me 4 weeks of 4 different broadcast crews presenting that week. You pick the stories, you pick the narratives, you pick how everything is going to be framed, and we essentially are seeing one thing from 4 different perspectives.
Interesting. So it wouldn't be a different crew every week. It would be the same 4 crews each week.
No. You get 4 different crews. But you are highlighting the exact, you're highlighting the 1 week slice.
So essentially what you're saying is that you could have a show that is produced by the 24/7 team, and then you could have a show that features the same material directed by David Lynch.
And Spike Lee and whomever. Take your pick. Because honestly, the one thing we do know about hockey players, for every, you know, Mitch Korn, there's a really boring person. There's a guy that's just a hockey guy, and he's been a hockey guy, and he does hockey things, and we all know what these hockey things are. Like, at a certain point, it's going to be, I remember the first one came out, everything was, wow, this is amazing, you know, given to awe, this is fantastic. But then after a while, it's like if you went back and watched that first HBO 24/7, would it still be as exciting to you?
Yeah.
Probably not.
I think so.
But it's that, it was really, no, listen, the way it was done is fantastic. I mean, that was first rate. But really, it's the stuff that's in there, any of it surprising anymore? Like, once you have that peek behind the curtain.
Yeah, right? That's true. Sorry, I'm hung up on the idea of Werner Herzog doing a hockey documentary. Epics presents : The Road to the NHL Winter Classic.
And then once per show, he pulls himself out of the narrative. As a director, I should not do this, but I can't help but to commentate on what I am seeing now.
But of course, I mean, Werner Herzog would have been perfect for the Philly season. I mean, Ilya Bryzgalov and Bears and the director of Grizzly Man.
I can't help but thinking of Timothy Tate as well.
I completely agree with your film. It is the most eye-opening feature I have ever witnessed. You tell the story of bears perfectly. They are enemies of people.
From perspective of bear, not from perspective of man.
You have chronicled the life of the most bloodthirsty killer since Hannibal Lecter.
All right, we got to do something about going postal on Wednesdays, because I do the junior podcast.
So I know.
Normally when we do postal, we go overtime, so we're going to have to maybe make it a – why don't we just make it a Friday favorite instead of something else?
You are such an asshole. We're not making it a Friday favorite. But we'll take all of your questions that you queued up today. We'll do it tomorrow. Eric Wood writes in, happy birthday is copyrighted. The copyright does not expire until 2030. Sir, tell that to the waiters and waitresses at TGI Fridays.
Yeah, that's right. How about – Claire used to work at TGI Fridays in London.
Get out of here, really?
Well, not in London, in Sheffield when she was going to art college at Leeds. Yeah, she worked at TGI Fridays.
So, now, hold on.
She wore the big buttons.
Did you work in food service?
No, I worked at Tiny Tom Donuts.
That counts.
At the CNE for 3
Everybody
weeks.
Who worked in film and food service understands each other better. I worked at Burger King. Ruby worked at Olive Garden. Your girl worked at TGI Fridays. You worked at Tiny Tim's Donuttery.
It's like when I was 16 years old. I was a bartender when I was in my early 20s.
Well, that's also food service.
It's drink service. Drink and pretzel service.
It's beverage service. Did you ever put out beer nuts? Food service.
Yeah, that's true. I did.
All right, listen. Merrick's got to go do his award-winning and extraordinarily popular podcast, Junior.
The fourth one. Stay tuned.
Which is, of course, you know, chronicles the relationship between Dr. Henry Jones and his son, Indiana. Junior.
Junior.
Oh, Junior.
Dad.
I named the dog Indiana.
That's pretty hip. I forgot all about that. That's right.
That was a good pull.
Indiana.
Are you not here tomorrow and here Friday? How's it working? What are you doing?
Yeah, I got doubleheader tomorrow on Sports Sense, so I ain't around, but I'm back on Fry's Day.
All right. We'll see about tomorrow, but definitely Friday, getting down on Friday. We're pushing forever closer to year in review stuff, by the way. End of year awards and looks backs and all that other bullshit. So we'll get into that. Thank you to Jody Shelley. Thank you to those who endured the first 6 minutes of the potty. Producer Brent, if you could, mayhaps we cut the first 5 minutes of the potty.
No, you want to keep it in? This is a historical document. Everybody wants to see you talking to the ghost of Jeff Merrick.
Oh, yes.
Everybody needs to hear that.
The guy who didn't have his voice stuttering and muttering to himself for 6 minutes would like to preserve the integrity of that part of the podcast.
It's part of history. It's going to go down like our drunk show. Remember when Greg talked to himself for 6 minutes pretending Jeff was there? Is this what it's like at Greg's house when Jeff's not around?
I don't know how I could be talking to a large bunny, but there you are, Harvey.
Can you once just say in a really angry tone, "I'm talking to Harvey"? Come on, like give me
to Harvey.
There we go.
Teacher says every time a bell rings, Jeff Barrett gets his wings.
Why can't I just keep Jimmy Stewart movies separate? Next, I'll be doing a filibuster.
I still haven't. Normally, that's a big tradition. Normally, by this time, I've seen that movie about 3 times. It's A Wonderful Life. I haven't seen it once yet this year. How many times have you watched it? Is that a tradition for you, by the way?
No, it's usually on like one day on NBC here. I mean, A Christmas Story is a tradition for me.
Really?
Oh, God, for sure.
No, that's good.
By the way, very last thing, because Jeff has to go. If you are a fan of It's a Wonderful Life and you've never seen the SNL parody in which they do the scenes that take place after the film is over, in which George gets his revenge on the old man, and it's Dana Carvey as Jimmy Stewart and John Lovitz as the old crotchety old man. It's fantastic.
Check
it out.
It's called me a warp frustrated old man.
At one point, Jimmy Stewart like jostles him, and he stands up out of his wheelchair. Dana Carvey, as Jimmy Stewart, goes, "But you're not even a cripple." And Lovitz goes, "I can explain." in that Lovitzian voice, it's so good. All right, that's about it. Bye, everybody. Enjoy a Junior whenever it hits, and don't forget tonight, ladies and gentlemen, once the bewitching hour of midnight passes, the season one finale of Serial may be on your iTunes. We'll all find out what the big finale will be. All right. Shootout suck. Thanks to Jody Shelley. Bye.